Hey, you are listening to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast, episode 23.
For months you've been away, you're here a couple days. I've got all of the time in the world to do with what we please. If it were up to me, we'd have all.
Hey, welcome to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast. I'm Eric.
I'm David.
And we are the Fanboys Who Strike Back. Each week we buy comics, read comics, and we come here to talk about them. We talk about everything that happens in the comics, so beware. We don't hold back. We spoil things. So with that, David had the book of the week this week, and so surprise, surprise, what did we pick?
Yeah, big surprise. It was actually Green Lantern number 25.
It was damn good. It would be hard not to pick this book.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of the whole thing, is that ever since the Sinestro Corps War started, you know, you and I have... the Green Lantern books have dominated the Book of the Week. And I'm always trying to find something different, but, like, you can't help it if it really is the best book that came out. And there was, like, without a doubt, this was the best book to come out this week, maybe this year. This book was incredible. We finally saw the wrap-up to the Sinestro Corps War. And, you know, I kind of talked about it a couple episodes ago about just how good of a job Geoff Johns is doing with the Green Lantern mythos and how he's really making sense of everything that, like, previous writers have never done. I mean, we're going into why their Green Lanterns are green, you know, in this issue, and what the core is coming from. There's more cores, there's more lanterns, everything. And I was just like, you know, Geoff Johns really could be the Green Lantern writer, and this really could be the definitive Green Lantern story. And after reading this issue number 25, like, there's no doubt in my mind, like, this was the definitive Green Lantern story. It really was.
Yeah, there was just so much happening in this book, and not that we just got the conclusion to the war, but we got glimpses into what's going to be coming up soon within the next 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's just like the scope of this thing is huge. It's just a very, very epic scale. And Johns and Reese and Skyver, I mean, they all turned in top notch work. Like, I don't mind now that this book was late, and I see why.
Exactly.
But I've been very vocal about my displeasure with DC and DiDio's choices that he's made for the company lately. But really, this book, if the rest of the DCU could be as good as this, like, that'd be phenomenal. But this just stood out head and shoulders above almost anything else that's happening in comics right now.
Yeah, I think this single issue, this story as a whole, is like the benchmark of what comics should be. I mean, people should want to do this, you know, like, writers and artists should be like, I want to have a book just like that, because there was so much action in it, but there was so much story too. And it's really hard, you know, I'll give credits to the writers and the artists, it's very hard to find that balance, especially if you're doing a big story like this. And going into this last issue, I loved the Sinestro Corps War, and I was just like, you know, there's no way that all this stuff is going to wrap up. You know, there's no way I'm going to come out of this, you know, being as happy with it. It's going to let me down somehow. There's so many loose ends. Something's not going to get tied up. And I was like, okay, but I'm okay with that. Because, you know, but it wasn't. Like, honestly, this was like a perfect comic book.
Yeah. What were some of the standout moments for you in this?
There's so many. I got chills so many times. Let's see. I really loved that you see the true resurrection of Coast City. And the reason why I was so touched by that is because I didn't even know that I actually cared about that city at all. But when, you know, when the stakes are down and everything looks against them, you know, Hal actually goes to Coast City and he gets on every single TV and he's like, okay, you need to evacuate. All you people need to go. And Hal's brother there is basically, you know, are you telling us to run away? And Hal kind of thinks about it, and he's like, yes. And that's so out of character for someone like Hal Jordan to do, because, you know, he's a stand-up-and-fight kind of guy. But it shows that he has changed since he's returned, you know, and it's like, you still got the parallel between what's happening now and, you know, the return of Superman, or the death of Superman, where he is so afraid that the same thing is going to happen again, and that he's going to lose all these people, he's going to lose his city, and he's going to be a failure. And so he's just kind of manning up and saying, okay, you have to leave. And instead of everyone leaving, you know, one person turns on a green light in their house, and then one person sees that, and they turn on a green light, and then pretty soon you have a shot of the city, and there's just green lights everywhere. And I literally got chills, you know? Like, that's the rousing moment that you see in movies. And, like, that was this in this issue.
Yeah, it was the rally moment by far. But also, I really like that moment, too, because for knowing that character and for him to go and do that, you really got the sense that the stakes were really high in this story. Like, you know, and throughout the whole buildup of the arc, you know, a lot of Lanterns had died, and we saw how the Guardians had responded to that using lethal force and everything like that, but this really felt like a military-type book, but in this case, you know, where it might spill it into, you know, civilian casualties, it really felt like the stakes were really high to where, you know, the point where Hal and Kyle are telling everyone to get out of the city. And so it made everything feel that much bigger before the climax. Like, it was just a really, really big deal. Second moment I really liked was the end where Hal and Kyle both, you know, didn't have any power left in their rings, and they,
right.
Sinister didn't either, and they fought him just, you know, duking it out with fists. And I thought that was a nice echo back to Emerald Twilight when Hal and Sinestro, you know, flicked off their rings and just went bare knuckle boxing with each other.
Yeah, pretty much.
But no, it was good. It paid off in every sense of the word. There's no disappointment in this.
Yeah, I mean, they handled the Superboy Prime stuff, or Superman Prime stuff, very well. The Anti-Monitor. I mean, there's so many stuff. Like, there's a point in this where, if you're a Guy Gardner fan, you got choked up because you thought he was in trouble, but then he comes back with a plan to take down Anti-Monitor. You know, I couldn't believe, like, they did such a good job. And, you know, like, I don't want Final Crisis. I don't want a big hyped-up event. Like, I just want this, you know?
Yeah. Well, another thing, like, that really has to be given to Geoff Johns' credit is, like, he also took one of the biggest villains in the DCU, the Cyborg, and made him, like, a compassionate character. Like, I felt for that guy in this book. And he's still a villain, but yeah, it's like, this guy's a mass murderer, and you still, like, kind of get a little attached to him. So it was just very, very well written. I mean, this, I can't wait for the, you know, the bound hardback version, because I'll definitely be buying it for my bookshelf.
Oh, definitely. And then, I mean, we're teased with summer of 2009. The Anti-Monitor lands in some kind of planet, and he has turned into the power source for a new Black Lantern, and we see that in 2009, the dead will rise with the Black Lanterns. And it was just, and like, it's like, it's a teaser, it's basically a trailer, and you get so excited for it. And, you know, there's a link to on our site to an interview that Geoff Johns is doing about what's going to happen between here and now, and what we're going to go through, and he really is going to start fleshing out the rest of these core members and the other Lanterns. And I think the biggest reason why I love this book is that when I looked at Green Lantern Rebirth, I was like, well, that's a pretty good story for Hal coming back and Kyle not being Green Lantern. But, like, with the end of this issue, number 25, like, I am officially excited that Hal Jordan is back as Green Lantern. And that's honestly something that I never thought I would say.
Yeah, again, like, Johns is able to take characters that you hated or were so-so about and really, you know, make you attached to him, and that's a sign of a great writer.
So, what's going on in the resurrection of Ra's al Ghul?
Oh, God. Well, actually, this this book, despite being at the totally unbelievable point where we were at the last chapter, by the way, this is chapter 6 of 7 in Nightwing number 139, and first off, you know, it's understandable that Tim has had a lot of bad stuff, you know, happen to him over the last couple of years. He's lost a lot of people, and I understand that he'd be dealing with that, and maybe, you know, the emotions are high and close to boiling over a lot, but I still don't believe that he would betray everything that Bruce has taught him, or, you know, betray his surrogate family to try and bring back his real family. Like, he knows better than most about what, you know, the perils of that situation. So, with that, what I really like about this issue was not so much the Robin Nightwing showdown, but the dialogue that takes place, because basically it's just an argument between brothers. And if you took the fight out of it, it really is just an argument. So trying to avoid you know, most of the action in this. I was very deeply into the story, and you really get the sense that, you know, Tim's just, he's pushed too far at this point, and Dick is playing that older brother role of saying, you know, I understand what's going through, but you have to look at it, like, through, you have to calm yourself down and just look at this logically, you know, it's not going to work, and I'm sorry, and everything like that, and I'm really trying to be compassionate, but in the end, he has to let Tim make that choice on his own, and of course, you know, Tim's a good character, he's not going to make the bad decision, so he comes out of it all right, and at that point, I was like, okay, well, that's not bad, but then, what I was kind of annoyed at with this issue is, as good as the dialogue driven between, you know, between these two was, it was most of the action of the actual story and the resurrection story was taking place off screen, and it seems like we lost a lot of it, because on the last page,
that's what I was going to ask you.
Damien and Bruce are all there, and it seems like there was a missing piece to that, so maybe we'll get next week.
Like, I was really surprised to know that this next issue, everything's going to wrap up, because I mean, I've only gotten a couple issues here and there, but to me, it just seems like nothing has really happened.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, first, you know, we saw Damien a little bit earlier in this, and he was going after Bruce, and then next time we see him, Ra's has him. So it doesn't make any sense. There's not very much continuity going on here, and I think the way that they've split this up into side books with Robin and Nightwing, I think that was just a really horrible idea, because there's no... Basically, this should have been one writer's project. And you could tell, like, this was going to be Grant Morrison's thing, because it was Damien involved. But he had to split up, and I feel like, you know, they're trying to focus on giving him enough of the side character screen time in their own books, but also, like, they're getting away from the story, and it's just too much. It's just not a very well-paced story, and I've said this before, but the execution of this was just very, very poorly done.
Yeah, you're right, because, I mean... The last chapter, it was all about, you know, Bruce being in Nanda Parbat, and you would think that with this new issue, we'd have some of Tim and Dick, and then, you know, we'd be seeing something going on in Nanda Parbat, but we didn't see it at all until the very last panel, which was really odd.
Yeah.
But, whatever. I mean, they might wrap it up pretty good. We'll see.
I'm not counting on it.
Yeah. Well, we have to mention Green Lantern Corps number 19, actually just pretty much for the last page.
Yeah. Well, this was a really nice epilogue, I felt like. After the very, very action-heavy episode last time, it was kind of nice just to sit back and be like, oh, okay, you know, you could breathe at this one.
Right. And it really seemed like a war, and the war was over.
Yeah, but there was a nice exchange between Kyle and Guy in the first part, and just to show kind of character growth for Guy Gardner, you know, he's sitting there talking, you know, how living to old age, he never thought that'd be a luxury and stuff like that. And you don't ever think about that because, like, back in the day, back in the early 90s and stuff like that, the Green Lanterns, they just didn't die all that often. But, you know, we've seen so much death in this book lately that really any character could go at any time. And so now you think about it and it's like, yeah, being a Green Lantern is pretty dangerous work, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure.
So, but there were a lot of nice touches. There's the one Green Lantern of Thanagar, and I loved how he went back and he, you know, jumps in the ocean and he's swimming around. He's like, I'm still here! You know, that was... I thought that was really kind of good. I thought that's...
Yeah, like it makes it type of moment. Feel really real.
So, but yeah, I mean, it was fantastic, and we got glimpses of still what's to come with Guy and where evidently he's going to move to. But also what I really liked is, even though the Sinestro Corps War is over, the Corps itself is not gone.
Right.
Which we got teased with on the last page with, you know, Mongol, who's a very classic Green Lantern villain. He's now a Corps member, or a Sinestro member.
That's pretty gutsy. That's pretty, I was intrigued by that.
That's big, because he could kill Green Lanterns without a ring. And now that he's got a ring, that's going to be good stuff. So, I enjoyed it. I think...
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
It was a great companion piece. I started off saying, you know, I didn't think you needed to read that to enjoy the main part of the story, and I don't think you had to, but I think it really, really added a lot to the story.
Yeah, exactly, which is what, I mean, that book should be, because I thought the core book, I thought it started off pretty well, and then it got a little bit iffy, but with the war, it's been very, very good. It's been a very good companion book, just like you said.
Yeah, another part I really like about the character choices that they've made in that is with Kyle not being Ion anymore, and they've made him a part of the Honor Guard, and so he's Guy's partner. And so I like that he's going to be in this book with the other Lanterns. So
right.
Happy about that. So countdown bullet points really quickly.
Hit me with it.
Well, basically, Brother Eye is moving into position to do something really bad. We don't know what yet. The Olmecs are back. Mary Marvel still battling it out with Eclipso. Still kind of weird. Jimmy Olsen's on an apocalypse. Not a whole lot happened, but what did happen was we got treated to a scene with Monarch. And we'd kind of seen this in the spinoff book. I didn't buy it, but the Countdown Arena, which is basically he's taking multiple versions of Batman's and multiple versions of Green Lantern's from across the multiverse and having them duke it out, and whoever survives is he's recruiting for his army. And so in this one, we had three Batmans, one from the Gotham by Gaslight, one from the Vampire Batman world, and another one that I couldn't remember that elsewhere in this book that he came from. But what they did is they killed off two of the Batmans from the other multiverses, leaving the Vampire one on Monarch's army. This is another thing where I'm thinking they're going to do away with the multiverse, because not only this, but with Superboy Prime and everything, they've been killing off a lot of substantial characters that you would need to tell a story about a multiple Earth, you know, stuff like that. So if you were going to go to, say, Earth, you know, 15 and tell a story about it, you'd want to have all those characters readily available. They've been killing them off like kindling lately. I mean, it's just crazy. So I would be really pleased if that was going to be the outcome, but and I don't want to say it is yet, but there's a lot of clues to say that's the direction that they're going to take it in.
I guess. Maybe. We'll find out.
Yeah. And so that was about the only interesting, you know, thing that you really had to come away with knowing on this issue.
All right. I'm still so sorry. I'm not reading it.
Yeah. Well, we're getting down to the end. We got 20 more issues. So about a little, you know, a couple months left.
Right. Did you pick up X-Factor 26?
I did not, actually.
You didn't?
Well, I read yours.
Oh. Okay. So. Well, that works. Well, this was actually a pretty heavy story going on in Messiah Complex now. We have Scott Summers telling Charles Xavier that he basically needs to leave the mansion. You know, Charles is kind of talking to Scott, and Scott has unleashed Wolverine and the X-Force to go after Cable no matter what the cost. And Xavier's kind of like, you know, what are you doing? You're not sure what exactly you're doing, and you need someone here to tell you that, you know, this might be a little bit iffy. And Scott's like, you know, you raised me to be a leader, let me lead. And Xavier kind of backs off, and he's like, okay, you're right, I'm sorry. And Scott's like, no. He's like, you know, as long as you're here, you're going to keep on saying things, so you know what you need to do.
He was kind of sending the little kid out of the room, you know, type of thing. I mean, it's interesting. Where do you think that dynamic is going to go between the two of them?
I have no idea, but I think that I don't know. Like, I think it's going to have obviously a bigger effect on Charles than it is on Scott. But I'm not sure what's going to happen. Like, I have no idea, because Scott's being very vocal about it, and to a certain degree, he's right. You know, because Xavier needs to sit back, Scott is the leader. You know, Xavier's been gone for quite a while. But, you know, what is Charles Xavier going to do if he's not with the X-Men?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, so, it'd be interesting. With Scott pushing him away so much, I'm kind of wondering, like, and I doubt this is going to be the way it goes, because Xavier's such a flagpole character for, you know, his dream. But if he allied himself with a different faction that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, that's what it kind of seems like, especially with, like, the when they were doing the solicitation, they said, you know, expect some main characters to do things that you wouldn't expect. And so at this point, it almost seems like Charles being backed into a wall where he doesn't, like, he has to go do something, and I think he just might make a bad decision because of it.
Yeah, because he's being pushed away so much, and he's not doing it. He hasn't done anything in the storyline so far.
So he hasn't helped at all. So I think we're going to have to wait and see how that plays out. We had Deathstrike and the Reavers finally caught up to Cable and basically beat the crap out of him, leaving him bloody, and it looks like they're in a position to get the baby. And, you know, we still don't know what Cable's motives are. So, yeah, it's a good issue.
It's still a good story arc. I'm really enjoying that.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, honestly, every other book after Green Lantern coming out this week, every other book was like, yeah, it was alright.
Yeah, even if it was good, you're like, yeah, we made the mistake of reading Green Lantern first.
Exactly.
That was a problem. One I wanted to talk about, another team book, actually, The New Avengers, number 37. Mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying this book. At first, I had a little bit of trouble because I can't remember if this book has been coming out regularly, but I remember last time, you know, the cable of villains that's really come together. I was really excited by that because the organization factor of it seems like something that they've never really had before. I really like this Hood character, first of all, and his kind of upfront approach with dealing with things. Like, he's a dude who's not just some wacky guy in a costume. He makes sense. He's running organized crime, and it's very smart, actually. So what I was just thrown off by was I guess this was just me being stupid, but I didn't get that there was something going on to make them think that all the Avengers were there, basically.
Oh, Doctor Strange's magic?
Yeah. So, like, I was like, was everyone working together? And they showed, like, Captain America being there, and I was like, okay, something, it's a spell or something like that. You know, it's fake. It's not there. Mm-hmm. But, I this is just Bendis' writing, but I just think it's really, really well written. And the art, as confused as I was by the different characters showing up in this, like, right. As soon as I understood what was going on, the artwork's just fantastic. I know a lot of people criticize you, or criticize Lanell Yu, about him being a little bit too sketchy, but for some reason, like, there's a real jagged touch to the characters, and I really like that. I think it looks really, really good.
Yeah, no, you're right. It was hard for me to get used to it at first, but once you do get used to it, it just seems natural.
Plus, another thing that I like probably most about this book is I stopped reading Amazing Spider-Man just because it wasn't fun anymore. And Spider-Man books out of any superhero book should be a fun book. But, you know, I just got so sick of, you know, 8 months of Peter moping around about, you know, oh, my aunt's going to die. I was done. But in this book, like, he's wisecracking, he's, you know, making people laugh. He's having fun being Spider-Man.
Right.
Like, yeah, it's enjoyable. I enjoy reading him here more than I do probably anywhere else, other than the Ultimate books.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, Bendis has a perfect hold on Peter Parker, whether it's Marvel Universe or Ultimate Universe.
I'm really excited by the end where they break everyone out of jail who they just spent the whole issue putting in jail, and he's like, okay, we're gonna take the fight to them now, you know?
Yeah, no, the Hood is definitely a good character. I mean, you don't really get... I mean, he's kind of like the Luthor, but people want to follow him, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, there's perks to following him.
Well, he takes care of his own, too. So It's kind of interesting to see that in that kind of community.
Last book I want to talk about was New Warriors number 6. You didn't get a chance to pick this up?
No, I forgot it even came out. I didn't see it on the shelf.
Yeah, New Warriors has been really hit and miss. You know, I've really liked the idea behind it. You know, the one thing that we talked about is that they really need to reveal who Night Thrasher is.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically do in this issue.
Is it the old Night Thrasher?
Honestly, I don't know. And that's one of the problems I have with this book, is that at the very end, you see it's someone that looks like Dwayne Taylor, but a couple issues ago, we were introduced to, like, his brother or his cousin, I think it was. And I think that's who it is. Because you see someone in a wheelchair, and that's the character that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very end, you see this character that's in the wheelchair stand up, look outside the window, and then you see a reflection of Night Thrasher behind him.
Mm-hmm. So you still enjoying this book as much as you were originally?
Yes, but I see the problems behind this book because... The reason why I enjoy this book so much is that I pretty much know most of these characters already, because a lot of these characters are former X-Men or former New Mutants, or a lot of them are related to the X-Men universe. My biggest problem with this book is that if you did not know these characters, they haven't reintroduced these characters at all. You know, like, sometimes if you have a team book, on the very first page you have, like, a roll call, you know, you have the shots and who the person is, and what they can do, what their powers are, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
This book hasn't had that at all, and it really needs it, because you haven't been introduced to these characters one by one, so it's really easy to get lost, because you don't know who's who, what their powers are. A lot of these mutants were depowered after M-Day, And so now they have these new powers, but you don't know where they are. And it's just kind of a mess. So I still think it's a good book. I just think that they need to be more organized in how they're giving away this information.
Yeah. I think that's part of it, and I think the pacing really kind of felt like it slowed down for some reason lately. And it's true, like, I came into that book as a newbie. Like, I don't know any of those characters very well. I know Jubilee because she was, you know, a former X-Men and stuff like that. But you're right, like, I don't feel like I know anybody on that book, whereas in, like, the Initiative, they've spent time, you know, with each person, mm-hmm. with personality, you know, you feel like you can relate to at least one of the people on the team. But you know them a bit better by now, and both these books started about the same time. So I just feel like this team book actually kind of felt like it slowed down a little bit, and I'm lost. And the problem with that is the longer it goes like that, the less interested I become.
Yeah, no, I think that's completely valid, too, you know, which it makes me sad because I'd really like this book to do well, but I can totally understand why people wouldn't want to read this book.
Well, I think it'd be really hard now, too, to go just pick up an issue, like, if you weren't reading it from the beginning.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you can't really jump on right now. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll wait and see. Maybe they're just introducing the team first, and then they'll go through with each character. I mean, that's really kind of not really organized, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, the last book I want to talk about, actually, is Booster Gold number 5. Okay. And in this book, we got some interesting revelations, and basically the crux of the first arc is finished at this point. They've, you know, Booster and Rip doing the Back to the Future thing, and they're going through all the historic events of DC and stopped the people who are tampering with them. So that's all done with, and it was wrapped with last issue. And the interesting part of this was this asshole character of Booster Gold. He originally signed on to do this because, you know, he had access with Rip Hunter to the time stream. He's like, you know, I'll do this for you. I'll be selfless and I'll do the hero thing. I'll step up. But to do that, you're going to help me bring back my best friend and being Blue Beetle, which, you know, they're pairing. So I thought they were actually going to do it. I was like, well, it's valid. You know, the death of Ted Kord kind of served its purpose for Countdown. And he doesn't really need to stay dead anymore. Like, it'd be totally plausible to do it in this book.
Right.
But what happens was, throughout the storyline, I'm just going to kind of paraphrase it really quick, was Rip tells Booster there's one more thing we got to go back and fix, and basically it's Barbara Gordon was never supposed to be shot and paralyzed by the Joker. So they actually go back into the Killing Joke storyline, and he sends Booster back, and basically Booster fails, because it's the Joker, and basically, you know, he plans for everything, and plus Booster's just not intelligent enough to deal with him. So he fails, and he gets brought back by Rip, and he says, okay, I failed, you gotta send me back. And Rip's like, okay, and sends him back. And you just see him failing over and over and over again, and just being brought back, you know, on the verge of death each time. And, like, 5 times after that, he's like, I send me back again. And Rip's saying, no, you know, you gotta understand this. And he said, I've got something to tell you, you know, I lied to you, you know, Barbara was meant to be shot and paralyzed. But the thing is, you gotta realize, is that there is no changing that course of events. That is solidified time, and nothing is going to happen to change that, no matter how many times you go back. And he says, I want you to realize that, because that's the same thing with Ted Kord, is that solidified time. Ted's not coming back.
So is there a difference between solidified time and time you can change?
Yeah, which doesn't make sense. I mean, I guess there's, like, if you believe in, like,
there's certain events that you just can't change, is what he's saying?
Right, and I guess it's kind of a butterfly effect or something like that, but you just, like, there are set events in history that no matter how the build-up goes, that they're just always going to go through a certain outcome.
Right.
So that was kind of wishy-washy. Like, I don't know how I feel about that, because time is always supposed to be flexible, and at least that's how they've made it in this book, so at least stick to it a certain way.
So how did Booster react to that?
Well, he was disappointed, but basically how that ends is, you know, he's hanging his head right at that moment, and then we get more Countdown crap thrown in here where, on the very last panel, I can't remember which Earth the Kingdom Come universe is on, but basically Blue Beetle from Kingdom Come shows up, Jamie Reese, the new young Blue Beetle, shows up, and he says, basically shows up right as Rip was saying, you know, Ted Kord's not coming back, and basically they show up and they're like, for the fate of this universe, and the despite whatever rules of time you have, he's, you know, he needs to come back. You know, he says the future depends on it. So they still might bring him back. The thing is, it looks like they're making him out like they did in the Challenges book, where they went to the Victorian Age Gotham, where they said that Blue Beetle is going to be a very big part of the final crisis. It looks like all of them are, or one of them is. So that was just a hint at something. And that's the kind of the thing with the crisis thing, is you're getting all this weird little snippets in random books. Like, I'm not buying Booster Gold for any previews of what's to come in Crisis or Countdown, but yet everything gets sucked into it, and I'm just like, I'm tired of it. I want to read a standalone book for a standalone book.
And see, that kind of worries me too, because some people didn't like Infinite Crisis all that much, but I loved Infinite Crisis. And the reason why I got so much out of it is because I read everything leading into it. I read all the miniseries. And so there was that one issue of Infinite Crisis that, you know, had made sense of, like, the last 3 years of DC. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm not willing to do this with Final Crisis, and so I really feel like I'm not going to get as much out of it, which I guess makes sense, you know, because I'm not putting as much into it, but I just wish, like, it was just, like, its own self-contained event.
Yeah, speaking of, the same damn thing happened in Green Arrow Black Canary, where they're getting off the island. Basically, Oliver Queen was kidnapped by the Amazons and was being held captive there. Black Canary was being recruited to train Amazons, but it was all a ruse to get Oliver off the island, and then they were, you know, on their way. And the thing was, you know, I was like, okay, well, that was kind of interesting way of starting off the book, you know, first arc. But then we were treated to the thing of the queen of the Amazons basically turned out to be Granny Goodness from Apocalypse. And it was, and the Dasan was there, and it was all Countdown related. And at the very end of it, basically the queen family is back on the boat with Mia and Dinah and Oliver and Connor. And they're heading home, you know, mission accomplished and all that stuff. And then something comes down from the sky, and I'm going to check real quick, because if it's two red beams, I'm going to shoot Superboy Prime. they updated Oliver Queen's costume again, basically, which wasn't a huge deal, but there's a beam that comes down from the sky, basically, and shoots Connor through the chest. And the last page is a cliffhanger showing Oliver holding Connor's body, bleeding, and it looks like he's dead, but I doubt that he is. It just seems like a cheap cliffhanger.
Right.
And I'm tired of a Green Arrow dead cliffhanger. I'm, you know,
every other issue.
Second time it's happened in like 3 months, and it's like enough already. So, yeah, that's all I really had to say about that book. I was enjoying it as it was a standalone story, and then all of a sudden it got like just that one panel of Granny showing up, and I was just so pissed off after that, because I just read Booster Gold and the same damn thing happened.
Well, there's one thing that we can learn about this week. Green Lantern 25 was very good, and we'll just leave it at that.
It didn't tie to anything else.
The rest of the books kind of they were kind of jaded by Green Lantern 25.
It was hard to meet that high water mark this week.
It was damn hard. Okay, Smallville came back this week. You know, it's one of the few shows that isn't directly affected by the strike. Apparently they planned ahead of time or something, because there's a couple more episodes left. And I was surprised, because this episode is actually really good. Yet, it starts off absolutely horrible. Let me set you up for the whole plot, is that Lois gets a call from some kind of crazy person. And this guy, of course, it's a Christmas-themed episode. This guy has placed a bomb on Chloe. So Lois has to do what this guy says and take down Lex Luthor, or else he's going to blow up Chloe Sullivan.
That seems kind of cliched.
Yeah, when it premiered and you got the premise, I was like, are you serious? This is just... This is terrible. But what you do find out is that Lois's pseudo-boyfriend, Grant, who is the editor of the Daily Planet right now, he's actually Julian Luthor. He's Lex Luthor's brother.
I thought... So they brought him back, actually? Because I thought he was dead.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was the whole thing. Like, I thought they were just going to ignore the continuity and just say that he's back. But what you find out is that the crazy guy who is talking to Lois, who wants to take down Lex, is he's a failed clone of Julian Luther. And what you realize is that Grant, the editor of the Daily Planet, is actually a successful clone of Julian. And Grant actually finds this out. Which, it sounds really cliche and it sounds really corny, but it's actually very well done. Because you see, the guy's name was Adrian, you know, the whole terrorist. And he comes in, and he's giving Lois this information to talk to Lex about. And he's trying to, you know, he's trying to have Lex come out and, you know, finally get taken down. And Grant's there, and Grant's realizing that the stuff that this guy's saying is, it's his memories. And so Grant turns to Lex and is like, you know, what's going on? Am I a clone? And Lex finally has to fess up and say yes. So that was one dynamic behind it, and I thought that that was very well executed. The second big surprise is that during the little half-season finale, we had a big confrontation between Clark and Zor-El and Kara, which left Zor-El dead. Kara is in, like, Minnesota, and she doesn't remember who she is. And Jor-El tells Clark that, you know, for disobeying him so many times, there's going to be a consequence. And so in this episode, we kind of see Clark going through the motions. He's talking to Lana. He wants to help Lana take down Lex and everything. He's acting like the normal Clark, only he's a little bit off. And at the very end, you see him hugging Lana, and you find out that it's not Clark, it's Bizarro.
Really?
And that, yeah, and that Clark is actually, he's like basically trapped in ice, or he's trapped in some kind of stasis back at the fortress. Which, that was a huge shock, because you had Clark through the whole episode, and you could see that he was being like a little bit dark, but it was very subtle to the point that like you wouldn't pick up on it. And then at the very end, you see him hug Lana, and then you see his face, you know, distort and gets all cracked, and it's actually Bizarro.
That's cool.
So, yeah, it was actually really, really cool. So, I am always saying the same thing. Like, Smallville's good. Again, it's really good.
Huh.
And I'm always surprised every single episode. I'm like, I can't believe it. But if you guys aren't checking it out, you should definitely give it a chance again.
Yeah, I've mainly buying the DVD seasons when I hear that they're good. But, you know, I think with season 6, they really stepped up because they realized they needed to at that point. And so I think ever mm-hmm. since then, they've kind of had a high watermark that they've been trying to really maintain. So, and I'm glad that the strike isn't really affecting them, because it's affecting everything else.
It's affecting everything else. I think they only have like a couple more episodes left, and then it will be over. But somehow they planned it, or they started earlier. They got lucky somehow. So,
Well, something else that I'm vastly excited about is the debut of the main trailer for The Dark Knight was shown, was released this Friday before I Am Legend, and is now online, which we've posted it at www.fanboystrikeback.com. Holy crap! I love this. The Joker, first of all, the Joker is, like, besides Darth Vader, the Joker is, like, my all-time favorite villain. Like, that's just how it is, and he terrifies me. I have a natural fear of clowns as is, and this just looks terrifying. Like, Jack Nicholson, yeah, he was goofy, and he was scary to an extent, but this is just a different level, where it's not funny at all. There's absolutely...
Yeah, you could take, like, I mean, we were kids back in 89, and you could laugh at the Joker then, you know, Jack Nicholson, you could be like, okay, he's scary, but you could laugh at him. I can't really see some kids laughing at Heath Ledger's Joker. He just looks really crazy.
Yeah. Well, just, they got the look down. I mean, despite it being face paint and not actual his skin being dyed or anything like that, it actually kind of lends to it. And the wrinkles in his face, and he just looks psychotic. And the way he kind of holds himself differently, and he talks differently. Like, there's a posture, and there's a... I don't know what it is, but he really found that character and embodied it throughout that film, it looks like. And I just cannot wait to see how much this pays off.
He has that one line where he says, like, hello, commissioner, and I was just like, oh, that's creepy.
Yeah, or that thing where he's like, you know, you changed everything. You know, they think you're a freak, like me. And there's a dark menace in his voice, but there's also a very lighthearted, like, jokiness to it too.
Yeah.
And I just cannot wait. And that scene where you see, like, a confrontation between the two of them, like, that's just the two sides of the coin right there, is Batman versus Joker, and I'm so excited to see that.
And yeah, I mean, surprise, surprise, it looks great.
Yeah, I know, and we've been saying it all along, and I'm sure it will be, but it's just, I'm so happy to see a comic book movie, and, you know, any comic book movie should be judged as a good movie first, and then mm-hmm. a comic book movie, you know, but to see something on this caliber with this much respect and love given to the character, and as a Batman fan, like, I'm just so happy about it. Like, it's fantastic that it's doing that. Yeah, and plus this helps out the whole comic book community. It's like when any good film or book or anything goes out, you know, it's a calling card to the rest of the community saying, this is how good it can be done. So, and I think Iron Man's going to really help out with that, too.
You know, it's funny, too, because I was thinking about it after the trailer. Batman Begins is the only comic book movie that I have absolutely no complaints about.
Yeah, I can't say
that. You come out of most comic book movies and you're like, ah, they could have done this different, but ah, they could have done this. And nitpicks are fine, because, you know, they're always going to be nitpicks, but I have no problems with Batman Begins. Like, there's not one complaint. Like, I didn't like the suit. That's the only thing I could say. So, it's definitely going to be, like, you know, Christopher Nolan and the cast, they have a very high standard to work up to, but judging from the trailer, like, they're gonna blow it out of the water.
Yeah. One thing I thought was interesting was they still didn't show any Harvey Dent.
I know, that's what I wanted so bad. Like, that's what I'm most excited for. Yeah. I want to see Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll get it soon enough.
I believe in Harvey Dent. So excited. Right. So, that was fantastic.
Well, there's one last thing we got for you. Eric and I are avid gamers. We've talked about it a little bit. I'm a little bit more hardcore. And I was at Walmart a couple of weeks ago, and I've been trying to be good and not buy myself stuff.
It's not.
But there was... What's that?
That's not true at all.
I've been trying. I said I've been trying. I didn't say I've been doing it, but I've been trying and not buying myself some stuff. And they had a demo of Rock Band up, so I decided just to try it, and lo and behold, I ended up coming home with it. So this weekend, we had Eric over, and we had a little Rock Band party, and Eric, what are your thoughts of Rock Band as a whole?
I was a big Guitar Hero fan before this. Rock Band blew it out of the water. And in a good way. I'm not saying it knocking Guitar Hero at all, but basically Guitar Hero is a guitar playing game. This was a group game in, you know, in the same way Trivial Pursuit is. I mean, like, you have to play this with other people.
Yep, that's true.
For it to really pay off. Like, I would not recommend that the lonely guy is going to sit by himself to go out and buy this. Like, it's not going to pay off for you. But it's just great. Like, the amount of detail that's put into it, the amount of actual songs that, you know, from the real artists was great. The locales that they got you going all over across the globe. I mean, it really feels fun. Like, you're going and playing these gigs and stuff like that. And I was really, like, seeing the guitar stuff before, it's like, okay, I can understand how doing that. And the drums, I could kind of see. I was really surprised with how well they did the vocals. Because basically, yeah, it's a pitch matching system. But from seeing how much you have to get right, you know, when you're on, like, a hard level setting, you really have to be on your game.
You really do. Like, it's actually pretty rough. And I was surprised by that, too. Like, I thought, because, you know, you have guitar, bass, drums, and vocals. And I thought the vocals were going to be really cheesy, really kind of karaoke-esque, but singing is actually really fun.
Yeah. And I found out the hard way. I was never meant to be a drummer.
Yeah, drumming is rough. I think we had a perfect mix, because we had my girlfriend who was on bass, and then we had a guitarist, I was a drummer, and Eric was lead vocals.
It was fun.
It's definitely a game. I mean, you get up there, you make a band name, you can customize your characters, and then you really go on tour. You know, you go, you play sets, you earn fans, you get buses, jets, groupies, roadies, sound guys. It's like, it's such an addictive game, you know, which Eric kind of found out, because we were playing it till, you know, 11 o'clock at night, And we're like, okay, you call it a night, let's just do one more song. Of course, you play that last song, and it unlocks, you know, six new venues. And so you're like, you gotta keep on going.
Yeah, it was rough getting up for work the next morning.
Yeah, but I mean, it's probably like the most fun, well, you know, it's definitely one of the most fun multiplayer games that you can have out there. Like, it's a totally different experience, you know, and it's definitely like, it's definitely the video game that people who don't like video games will love.
Yeah, it is, and it's great, and it really does, like David said, it had that very addicting combination of unlocking, which, you know, there's a lot of games out there where you just play through to unlock everything, but with everything you can get and earn, and the fun part is it's actually, you're penalized too when you don't do well, or when you get booed off the stage, you lose fans, and so it's just a fantastic game, and they put the whole experience of, you know, rock and roll music, and the atmosphere, and the concerts, and everything onto that game, and, you know, two thumbs up, by far.
Yeah. Great. I can't recommend a game more this year.
So, yeah, it was good. So, if you have any thoughts on Rock Band or the books that came out this week or the Dark Knight trailer, you can let us know at contact@fanboystrikeback.com. Also, if you have any comments about what you want to see on the show or if you have any feedback for us, we always love to hear from you. You can also go to our website at www.fanboystrikeback.com, and there we post our written reviews of the books of the week each week, plus movie posters, trailers, general interviews, items of interest that we think that you might like. And it was down for a while. We're going to try and get it back up soon. Was a link to our forums. So you can go on there and discuss topics that we've set up, or discuss a topic, you know, have us talk about a topic that you set up yourself. So we always like to hear what you have to say. And we're also on the MySpace.
Yep, myspace.com/thefanboystrikeback. You can come over there. We put our Book of the Week blog there. You can be our friend. Do the whole social networking thing. And then you can catch us on iTunes, Podcast Alley, any podcatcher out there. Download it directly from our site. Like Eric said, shoot us an email or head over to the forums. Leave us some feedback on the show. What you guys like about it, what you didn't like. We're always trying to improve the show, so we want to know what you guys think. So that's it for this week. Green Lantern 25.
Well, I want to be a member of the Corps right now. I'll tell you what.
Well, we're gonna have to choose which of the seven you want.
After this issue, I had my little plastic ring on, jumping around. You know, look clenched fists. I was just so happy.
There you go. All right, guys. I'm David.
I'm Eric.
We'll see you guys next week. And I'm stranded by the letter. When you go away, I get so low. Like some pictures when they're at the cold. Yes, once you go away, I get so lonely. When you go away, I get so lonely. And I'm stranded by the side of the bed.